Spirit Blade Underground, episode 324. Warning, access restricted. Please submit to DNA verification. Processing. Verification complete. Access granted. Welcome. Audio file encryption processing. Transmission decoded. Begin playback for system file. Spirit Blade Underground, episode 324.
Hello and welcome to the Monitor Room at the Spirit Blade Underground podcast, a biblical examination and celebration of geekery and geek entertainment, as well as the official podcast of Christian Geek Central, a website and very unique community you're invited to check out at ChristianGeekCentral.com. I'm Peter Franson from Spirit Blade Productions, producing entertainment and resources to equip, encourage, and inspire Christian geeks like you and like me to live more and more for Christ. For more info and free goodies, check out SpiritBlade.net. On the show today, my review of the movie Hercules. Woo! We'll see if that one's any good. And I think that's it. Unless I'm forgetting something. I'm probably forgetting something. I don't know. Let's just find out what's on the show. Here we go.
At last, the power of the dragon amulet is mine. It overwhelms your feeble defenses. Will now agree with all of my opinions and everything I say, even if it sounds stupid and wrong.
Hercules. So this takes place in ancient Greece, and the legend of Hercules has spread all over the civilized and uncivilized world, and people are looking for a hero, and Hercules is the one that they cling to. But is Hercules really all that the legends say? Well, no, and the plot tells us that from the very beginning when we see in an encounter he has with a group of pirates that all of his heroic feats of legend and strength and all that kind of stuff are actually accomplished with the help of a band of adventurers that, you know, mercenary adventurers that travel along with him and kill people without being seen and just make it look like Hercules is doing a great job. Hercules is called upon by a kingdom in peril. They tell him they will pay him his weight in gold to save them from the oppressive other kingdom that's attacking them. And so he comes to their aid and begins training their farmers and troops to get ready for war, and does lots and lots of training and training and training. And then there's a little bit of combat. All right. This is not that great of a movie. Okay. So first off, the story. Now, there in the last about, I want to say, 6 months to a year, when I talk to people about like what they're really interested in fiction, in entertainment fiction, they usually fall into two camps. They're either a story person or a character person. I'm a character person, so I want a movie that has lots of great characters that I can empathize with, that I feel their feelings right along with them. You could put them in a room and just have them talk to each other and have nothing happen except for their characters interact and feel things, and I would be happy. But when they're not doing that, as this movie rarely does, then I need the story to help me out and be interesting and creative, and this movie doesn't help me out with that either. The pacing is terrible. Like I said in my description of the synopsis, there's lots of training going on. There's lots of preparing for battle, lots of posing and preparing and training for battle. There's very little battle that actually happens in this movie. Further, I feel like the trailer for this movie was very deceptive. What it presented to us was, this is going to be a cool fantasy action epic type movie. And they immediately remove all of that by telling you, guess what, Hercules isn't really awesome, and all these legends and stuff, they're just little montage clips we're going to show while his legend is being told. And most of the movie is just about him, you know, as a normal dude. Now, I really should put normal in quotes. This is where the movie kind of One of the movie's biggest shortcomings, I think, is that it's not clear what the character's limits are. Hercules, despite the fact that, you know, we as the audience are let in right away on the idea that he is not, or probably not, you know, this kind of son of a god or whatever, he's still doing crazy things that are physically impossible to do. Yet he has clear limitations, you know? And so you might think, oh, well, maybe they're going to kind of tease us the whole movie and make us think, and maybe, and you know, as I watch it, maybe that is what they're intending during the movie, is to tease whether and leave you wondering, are his legends true or not, or what's going on with that, you know? But the problem with that is that his companions are doing crazy things that they shouldn't be able to do either. They are shooting people like two arrows. They're doing like freaking crazy Legolas type stuff with their archery. They're throwing weapons that never miss, and they're just too awesome. And not only that, but they've got like these blades that pop open on hinges, you know, the technology, the weapons technology is like, it's just weird. It's weird. So because of that, because the limitations of the characters are not clearly defined, then I just watched this movie. I was like, well, I'm not concerned for any of these people, because everything just seems to be really easy for them. And if they die, it's only going to be because the script decided, you know, we should kill somebody at this point and bring some emotion into the story, whatever. I mean, it's just, I wasn't concerned. I wasn't concerned a bit. So not only that, but the script, the dialogue, it's not interesting at all. It's very standard. This script could be a TV movie about Hercules that they just decided to make into a proper feature film, throw some familiar faces and pay, you know, money to get the familiar faces in there, throw a little bit of effects budget at it, a little bit, because as I said, there's only maybe two or three major combat sequences in the movie. Really disappointing. Now, as far as the cast is concerned, you got Dwayne Johnson playing Hercules, and he really does a great job. He's Dwayne Johnson. He's got more range than Arnold Schwarzenegger, so we should all be grateful for that. You know, he is, I guess, this generation's, you know, bulky, you know, action hero guy, and he does a great job. He's got more range than Schwarzenegger, at least I should say. But I mean, is he this really compelling type of, you know, performer in terms of acting? No, he just kind of does his thing, and there you have it. We got John Hurt, classic guy, you know, who's been in movies for years, and you know, he does fine, but he's still John Hurt, you know, old guy with gravitas, you know. Rufus Sewell, I felt was very underused, and I'm biased because I'm a huge fan of Dark City, and Rufus Sewell was the lead in that movie, and so I've always got my eye out for him whenever I see him and stuff. He plays mostly villains since Dark City. If you haven't seen Dark City, go see that. Don't see Hercules. Go watch Dark City, rent it or whatever. So he was very underused, but it was still nice for me to see him in here. I would say the standout performer was Rebecca Ferguson, who plays the mother, the widow, mother of one young boy who Hercules kind of befriends in this movie, and she's a very sympathetic character, or she's supposed to be, but really there's only one scene where she really stands out. When her son is in danger, it just looks like everything's hitting the fan and it's not going to end well. And that was like the first time in the movie, and this was toward the last, I want to say 30 minutes, where I was like, oh my gosh, I'm feeling something. I believe that she is totally in a panic over the, you know, the potential fate of her son. And so she was definitely the standout performer. Stunts and visuals, they're all right. You know, the stunts were not really creative or interesting. There were a few kind of like, oh, I'm going to push this thing around. And it was kind of this big slow motion, whoa, look how strong he is kind of thing. And but as far as the fight choreography, not very interesting. The visuals, there's not really any magic going on in this movie, or it's very light, almost kind of behind the scenes magic, very subtle magic. Really none to speak of. Like, you're not going to see any lightning bolt force blasts or anything like that. You know, it's definitely not that kind of movie. So, you know, I didn't find the visuals very impressive. And part of that is because there weren't enough scenes in which you would use visuals like you would expect in a fantasy adventure movie, you know. So that kind of fell short. Music was okay. It was standard fare, what you'd expect from, you know, from a fantasy, epic fantasy RPG, or, you know, these kind of movies today. I do want to talk about some of what I call kind of the relevance issues, you know, those things that might stimulate worthwhile thought or conversation either during or after the movie. The theme of a hero, what is a hero, is present in this movie. It's suggested at one point by Hercules. He tells a young boy that a hero must be strong, you know, and he gives him this little, you know, lion's tooth kind of thing, which is really weird, by the way. brief rabbit trail. He gives this kid this little tooth, and then eventually he gets it back in the midst of kind of like some stuff that I won't talk about, but it's like, oh my gosh. And so he just manages to grab it, and he tucks it into his little gauntlet bracer type thing, as if he's going to use it later on to his advantage somehow. That's really the sense that you get. And then we never see that tooth again. And so it was like this weird moment that I can't believe they kept in there. Maybe you can see the movie and tell me, oh no, remember he did use it. And it's something that I totally missed. But I don't remember that tooth ever being pulled out and used again. I thought he was going to pick a lock with it, you know, after being captured or something. Or I don't know. It was weird, 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 you know. So anyway, back to the kind of philosophical stuff going on. So he states at one point that a hero needs to be strong. One of the final bullet points thematically in the movie is at the very end, when a voiceover narration says that, you know, to be a hero, you don't need to be a demigod. And I might be misquoting this, but it was essentially the idea of you just have to believe in yourself, you know. I don't know. Is that what a hero is? First of all, they got conflicting messages there. To be a hero, you have to be strong. I don't think that's true. To be a hero, you have to believe in yourself. No, I don't think that's true. Now, I guess we could dig out Webster's and maybe there'd be some... Well, let's do that really quick. Let's see here. Okay. Bear with me for just a moment. Hero, hero, hero. Let's see here. Hero, okay. A man of distinguished courage or ability, admired for his brave deeds and noble qualities. That's number one. Brave deeds and noble qualities. That's what he's admired for. Brave deeds and noble qualities. So, distinguished courage or ability. Yeah, I guess maybe. Any person who has heroic qualities or has performed a heroic act and is regarded as a model or ideal. The principal male character in a story, play, or film. Okay. In antiquity, an individual possessing godlike prowess and beneficence, who often came to be honored as a divinity. Number five is hero is a sandwich. I typically think of a hero, and this is kind of like the way I think we ought to hold up the word hero, as someone who is admired for their courage or their deeds. Specifically, I would say their selfless deeds. You know, when we talk about the brave men and women who sacrificed their lives on 9/11, you know, or in other circumstances, they weren't necessarily strong. They weren't necessarily extra capable. You know, maybe they were among the least capable, but they sacrificed themselves. They put the needs of others before their own. And I think that's the ideal of hero that we ought to hold up. Not somebody that is strong, or not somebody that necessarily believes in themselves, but somebody that just puts the needs of others before themselves and is willing to sacrifice what's in their favor for what's in someone else's favor. But the more interesting philosophical idea presented briefly in this movie, and it's a punchline, but punchlines, I think humor shouldn't be disregarded. You know, if there's something that says, if there's a worldview or some idea that's being presented that's kind of like wrong, but it's funny, I think actually that can be disarming, and we can find ourselves absorbing and accepting ideas presented by stand-up comedians or that are good in a punchline or something like that in fiction or a video game or something like that, because it's funny, you know, and so it disarms us a little bit. There's a character, it was actually Rufus Sewell's character, who at one point says, he's talking, they're kind of giving a pep talk and training these soldiers, you know, and he says, you know, and if you die in battle, then you'll go up to Valhalla or whatever the ancient Greek heaven is, and you'll be with all the legends and stuff like that, you know, or you might end up in Hades where all the fun people are. Now, this is an interesting idea. Typically, we think of hell, or, you know, whatever the religion is that has like this bad place, the hell equivalent, you know, that's where bad people go. You know, there can kind of be this joke where like all the fun people are going down there, you know. And usually that's an idea promoted by people that really aren't interested in God or pursuing God. But really, that's not what the Bible teaches. The Bible doesn't teach that hell is where people go because they like fun. The Bible doesn't teach that sin is fun, or that fun is sin. Ecclesiastes 2, 24 and 25 in the ESV translation reads, "There is nothing better for a person than that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This also I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or who can have enjoyment?" And James 1:17 takes this a step further and says, every good gift and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shadow due to change. So every good, pleasurable thing that we experience was, we were designed to enjoy. We were designed to take pleasure in. Now, we can twist those things. For example, when somebody has an affair, they are going to have pleasure during that sexual experience. They're going to have physical pleasure. And that's because God designed us in a way to take pleasure from that specific kind of physical interaction. But the context in which that is being enjoyed, that's the evil. That's the evil, you know? And so I think feeling strong and feeling capable, you know, we're meant to feel that way. In our resurrected bodies, we will be strong. We will be capable. We will be raised in power, you know? Sown in weakness, raised in power is, I believe, what the Bible says about our resurrected bodies. But having power over others because of our insecurity and dominating others and stuff, that's feeling power, but in a selfish context, just as the affair is the sexual pleasure experience in a selfish context, you know. So it's that selfishness that disregards the concerns of others that is the sin. But the experience itself that we're taking pleasure from, that's by design. We're meant to enjoy feeling powerful. We're meant to enjoy the sexual experience. So to kind of promote this idea or perpetuate this idea that, you know, that fun is sin and sin is fun, and that the people that are going to hell, they're going to hell because they just like to have fun, you know. That's a bogus idea, certainly as far as the Bible is concerned. Okay, so in summary, gosh, this is like a movie that you can certainly afford to wait to rent or watch for free, if at all possible, if even that. To me, it's not this terrible movie, but I got stuff to do. So when I have to sit through a movie like this, I'm like, freaking TikTok people, you know? And, you know, this is Brett Ratner, who brought us the Rush Hour movies, who brought us Red Dragon, who brought us X-Men 3. So should we have expected more from this? Maybe not, you know? But anyway, as it is, it's rated PG-13 for epic battle sequences, violence, suggestive comments, brief, strong language, which was one F-bomb, which in the moment just felt like, okay, here's the one F-bomb we get to say because we're a PG-13 movie and we know we can get away with one. Here it is, you know. Lame. So also brief, strong language and partial nudity. My final score is, I give it a quality score of 6.5. Oh, I forgot to use my little actor image when I was talking about the actors. Sorry about that. There it is. I know you wanted to see that. Quality 6.5, and those of you listening to the podcast are like, what the crap just happened? quality score 6.5 out of 10. Relevant score 7.0 out of 10. I want to remind you guys to check out the other podcasts in the Christian Geek Central Network, such as the Strangers and Aliens podcast, the Theology Gaming podcast, and the Untold podcast. For more info about the CGC Network, visit ChristianGeekCentral.com.
The truth will set you free.
Truth. That which corresponds to fact or reality. To assert that truth is not absolute is a self-defeating proposition. Now, lots of things are possible, but our beliefs should reflect the best explanation of the available evidence. I'm no expert, but the information is out there. You'd be amazed what you can learn if you spend some time in search of truth.
The truth will set you free.
In this segment, I attempt to examine the Bible and dissect some of the churchy language we take for granted, using a little cultural history and linguistics now and then when I'm able to try and get at the heart of the text so we can hopefully see and apply some of what God has for us in these words today. This time, we're continuing our look at the book of Hebrews. We're in chapter 6 of Hebrews, looking this time at verses 9 through 12, which in the ESV reads, "Though we speak in this way, yet in your case, beloved, we feel sure of better things." Things that belong to salvation. For God is not unjust so as to overlook your work and the love that you have shown for his name in serving the saints as you still do. And we desire each one of you to show the same earnestness, to have the full assurance of hope until the end, so that you may not be sluggish, but imitators of those who through faith and patience inherit the promises." All right, so in previous verses that we looked at last time, I believe, the author of Hebrews described a scenario in which believers could potentially become bitter toward God, even hating him and thinking of him in the same way that non-believers do. In this scenario, believers like these could
live the rest of their mortal lives apart from God, making them spiritually unproductive. Now, as we kind of examined and as I concluded last time, believers in this scenario, they don't lose their justification. You know, they are not subject to the eternal wrath and punishment of God. They still keep that free gift of eternal life from that that moment that they chose to trust in Jesus. Despite the fact that they've allowed their minds and their hearts to become twisted and just kind of washed away with the current of the world, but they do result in living lives that are spiritually unproductive. Now, in verse 9, the author expresses both hope and confidence that his readers do not and will not fall into this category. He feels sure that his readers can be described in ways that are consistent with salvation. Now, again, anytime that word salvation occurs, I feel like because it's been, you know, so wrongfully drilled into our heads through casual conversation and sometimes through teaching from our pulpits, I think it's worth reminding a lot. Just like sometimes, you know, when I say the word grace, I'll throw in undeserved favor because that's what that means. That's kind of a churchy word. Well, salvation is almost like king of the churchy words that we gotta remember to unpack this. So as I've said many times before, salvation is a very broad word in the Greek. It just basically means to rescue, not necessarily, you know, this specific idea of being rescued from hell, being rescued from judgment, being granted eternal life. That's how we typically think of it. But I want to say most of the time, I've not looked into this exhaustively, but my impression is that most of the time when salvation is being used in the New Testament, it's actually talking about something different, or at least it's not specific to eternal life. So keeping in mind the context of Hebrews, which we looked at last time, while remembering that salvation broadly means rescue and can refer to, you know, really three different things. One would be rescue from God's judgment, as we typically think of it, and then also rescue from sinful patterns, which we would call sanctification. You know, rescue from God's judgment, that's justification. You are justified before God. Rescue from sinful patterns, that's sanctification, being sanctified. That just literally means being set apart for the purposes of God. And then the third way that salvation would be this future eternal rescue from even the presence of sin, from any kind of contact or exposure with sin at all. And sin being completely removed from us, completely removed from our circumstances and our surroundings. And that's what theologians classify as glorification. So we've got justification, sanctification, glorification. Those aren't always the best terms. Sometimes I wish that we would use a different word from justification, because then you'll see the word justified in Scripture sometimes, and it's not referring to the doctrinal concept of justification, which was developed by theologians, you know, many, many years after the New Testament was written, and yet the New Testament will sometimes contain a word that's translated as justified, so it can be a little bit confusing there. So we shouldn't necessarily always see the doctrinal concept of justification, even when we see the word justified in the New Testament. But anyway, that's where we're at. That's kind of what Christendom has given us. So anyway, remembering now that salvation can mean those three different things or a combination of those things, and given the context of Hebrews, it seems that in this case, salvation likely refers to sanctification, to this being rescued from sinful patterns, being set apart for the purposes of God. Supporting this assumption, I think, is verse 10, which transitionally describes how God will not fail to recognize the love and the efforts that these original readers displayed toward other believers. And things like love in action and efforts and serving, those are related to sanctification, you know, being set apart for God's agenda, doing the things that he would have us do. That's, you know, that's sanctification. So talking about those kinds of things in verse 10, that's what really draws me. And of course, all the context before this in Hebrews, which is all about, you know, just clinging to the hope that we have in Jesus so that we can be engaged with God's agenda, you know? And I'll talk more about that in next time when we're looking at Hebrews. But anyway, I think the context, I think verse 10, it all really strongly says to me, we're talking about sanctification here when the author says that he's confident his readers can be described in ways that are consistent or having to do with salvation. Notice the reference to God's name in verse 10. In the time period and culture surrounding the writing of Hebrews, someone's name represented like a summation of their character. So these believers that the author is speaking to were known by the author to love who God is. Now, what's even more interesting and a bit uncomfortable is seeing how that love was noticed. Did you guys pick up on that? The author doesn't notice it through their lengthy times of prayer or their singing. He didn't notice it through the creative efforts that they dedicated to God's glory. No, he noticed it because of the love that they showed for God through serving the saints, serving other believers. And this thought is similar to John 13:35 and 1 John chapter 4, verses 19 through 21. I would love to ignore verses like these. I'd much prefer to express love for God in solitude or through creative endeavors. And we certainly can and should express love to God in those ways if we're drawn to them. But Scripture specifically and repeatedly expresses the importance and value in loving and serving other Christians. As much as I'd love to be a hermit sometimes, this life is not about me, you know? It's about increasingly giving more of myself to other people. If we want people to see Jesus, then biblically speaking, that's how it's done. Verse 11 now seems to call back to Hebrews 3:6, which says, "But Christ is faithful over God's house as a son, and we are his house if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope." And you might remember when we looked at those verses that I concluded that really the best way to interpret and understand the Greek there is to say household affairs, you know, "But Christ is faithful over God's household affairs as a son, and we are his household affairs. We are part of his agenda if indeed we hold fast our confidence and our boasting in our hope." And Hebrews 3:14 says, for we have come to share in Christ if indeed we hold our original confidence firm to the end. So verse 11 seems to me like a bit of a callback to those ideas. The author urges us once again to remain earnest and confident in Jesus so that we can remain engaged in God's agenda for the world, not imitating the Israelites who fell away from faith and failed to enter their promised rest as described in Hebrews 3:15 through 19, but imitating those followers of Yahweh that exemplified faith and trust in him. We see that in verse 12. And we're going to see the first of those examples highlighted next time. Feedback, input, I want to hear from you guys. Request a review, give me your thoughts, questions, whatever. Really, it all helps me make the show better, gives me ideas for content. I'm always in need of that kind of stuff. So go to spiritblade.net/underground to record a message with your computer, or just send me an email at paeter@spiritblade.net. All right, a few things I want to go over by way of announcement type thingies. The Christian Geek Central video channel is technically up and running on YouTube. You can go check it out if you want. It's the YouTube channel's name is Christian Geek Central, all one word. But if you want to wait, that would be just fine, because right now all I've basically got there is my uncut movie reviews transferred over. That's the new home for the uncut movie reviews that I record, basically the video versions of the reviews that you hear on this podcast. And this last about week and a half, I took completely off from work on A World of Shadows, Spirit Blade, A World of Shadows, to kind of make sure that, to just kind of kick things into high gear and get all the content and stuff prepped for the YouTube channel. So I've got a banner up there with the new logo and stuff that took a little bit of doing. This was really testing. Testing me. I am just not tech savvy at all. As I said on the forums, it should read on my tombstone, he was the last person that should have been trying to do what he was doing. So, and somebody actually, was it, I'm going to credit the wrong person. I think it was D.N. Arrington that actually made a mock-up of a tombstone. I'm not sure. I could be wrong. But anyway, yeah, if you want to check that out, you can go to the forums. But what my plan is to... I've made basically intro bumpers for two different segments. For one segment that's going to be like an In Search of Truth type segment, I'm not going to be doing, at least not at the beginning, I don't know what the future holds, maybe it'll change, but I'm not going to be doing like weekly video versions of the In Search of Truth segment as heard on this podcast. That's going to, at least for the foreseeable future, going to remain exclusive to this podcast. But whenever I do topical segments... I'm gonna put those kind of like in a, you know, I'm gonna store those somewhere, and I'm gonna start re-recording actually the topical segments. So like, you know, the articles that you can find at ChristianGeekCentral.com that are like, you know, what do we do with questionable content? You know, is it okay to watch horror movies? Is it okay to play Dungeons and Dragons, stuff like that? Or there's another article that I wrote and shared on the podcast called like, should we love our hobbies? You know, so different things like that that are like, you know, where I use the Bible to inform my thinking, but they're more topical. Those I'm going to start recording videos of and putting them up on the YouTube channel. My goal is to have basically, at the bare minimum, one new video every week to start with, and then I'm hoping to attract other content creators. So if you're interested in creating content that would be of a specific interest to Christian geeks, and especially if you have some samples that you can show me, a YouTube channel that's already running or something like that, give me an email, paeter@spiritblade.net. I'm definitely interested in adding content to that, because I don't think I'll be able to do more than one video per week. And I'd really love to have that channel become more and more active over time and eventually just be buzzing with activity. But the plan coming up, which you can expect to see probably by the end of August, is at least one kind of topical In Search of... Actually, it's not going to be called In Search of Truth. It's going to be called The Truth Is In There. And then the other segment is that I've made a bumper for is... Inside Pater's Brain, which is just kind of like a segment where I can use to talk about whatever's on my mind, whether it's just about geekery or about... you know, something that's relevant to specifically Christian geeks, or just kind of like, you know, whatever, just kind of like it's a miscellaneous segment. And then the other one is Trial and Error. And this is something that I'm excited about. This is going to be basically my, I want to say, video game review segment. And I've, you know, done some work over the last 2 weeks also to figure out how to record nice quality game footage and record commentary over it. I also figured out how to do live streaming and stuff like that. So there's going to be a trial and error is most of the time going to be me doing like a recording of myself playing a trial version of a video game and usually sucking terribly at it. And then giving kind of my thoughts and initial impressions of the game and stuff like that. And personally, you know, whether I would plan to buy it or not. And some games I definitely will not buy. I'll just play because I know I'm going to be terrible at them and it'll make interesting video. But anyway, that's trial and error. And and I'm either going to lump into those videos regular video game reviews. Like I've got basically... I've got the video footage recorded, and I think I might even have the reviews written for a Baldur's Gate 1 and 2 review and Icewind Dale 1 and 2 review, you know, the Infinity Engine games that I've been playing through. So you can expect some video game reviews coming up. So definitely it's going to be populated more and more as time passes by things other than my uncut movie reviews. But I will let you know. I'll definitely be promoting it and shouting it from the rooftops when there's really something, you know, a little bit more variety in terms of the content there. Now, speaking of streaming, video game streaming, I'm going to be doing a 3-hour video game live stream on Twitch on Monday, August 11th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Monday, August 11th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific time. And I hope to have live chat enabled as well. I'm not sure if I'm going to do that through Twitch or I'm leaning toward doing it on the... what do you call it, on the Christian Geek Central forums, but I'm not sure yet. So if you want to give me feedback on your opinion on that, that would be great. But I hope to have live chat enabled as well to get your requests and your questions and comments and stuff as I play during the stream. This is in part a test run for my 24-hour live stream gaming marathon that's going to be on October 25th for the Extra Live charity event. I'd love you to be a part of the Christian Geek Central team for that event or to support our efforts. For more info, go to ChristianGeekCentral.com and click on Extra Life in the main navigation. In the meantime, once again, that date, Monday, August 11th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Pacific, and I'll give you specifics on how to get to the stream as we get a little bit closer. I just wanted you to have a chance to get that on your calendar for now. I will be off grid all of this next week. My wife and I are mentors in the College 20s ministry at our church, and this is their annual retreat, so I'm going to be gone all this coming week, but there should still be a show next week. We get back from that retreat on Thursday, and then I'm going to, if I've done this right, I have by now already recorded my video review of Lucy, of the movie Lucy. There's two videos. Oh my gosh, this is a crazy weekend trying to get these video reviews done and out, get the podcast out, and then leave for this retreat on Sunday morning. And I've also got a group of gaming nerds from the College 20s group coming over Saturday night, so oh my gosh, this is insane. But if all has gone according to plan, as you're hearing this podcast, or just like a couple hours after this podcast has gone up, you should be able to go to the YouTube channel Christian Geek Central, all one word, and see my review for the movie Lucy, which from the sound of it, you might not think anything of it, and I almost missed it, but this looks like a really cool kind of a modern time setting, but definitely sci-fi type of movie, starring Scarlett Johansson. That's right, that's her name, Scarlett Johansson. So anyway, I just couldn't fit it into the show this week because I produced the show. I'm recording the show on Friday, and I want to get it up on Friday, but I'm seeing Lucy on Saturday, and I just have too many other things going on to delay editing the podcast until then. But I will, I believe, be able to get that video up. So if you want to see my review in a timely manner to decide whether or not, you should see Hercules or Lucy this weekend, you should be able to watch both of those reviews back-to-back this weekend. Hercules will go up on that channel sometime Friday. Lucy will go up sometime on Saturday. So again, Christian Geek Central is the name, all one word, of the YouTube channel if you want to get my Lucy review. Otherwise, you can just wait, and it should be the main content for the podcast next week, aside from In Search of Truth and one other thing, which I'll get to in a second. So anyway, I'm going to be off-grid, won't be able to answer your emails. And I mean, like, I'll be more off-grid than usual. Like, I'm not even sure if I'll be able to access my computer. They might have Wi-Fi in, like, a rec center or something, which I'll be spending a lot of time in because I hate camping and I'd rather play board games and video games. And I'm going to be doing as much of that as possible while hanging out with these College 20s people instead of getting sand in every crack and orifice in my body. That's disgusting. Why did I say that out loud? To convey the tactile, visceral nature of my hatred for sand. But my wife bought me like this little shelter. My wife, she's so awesome. She bought me this special, I mean, not just for me, but for hanging out on the beach. There's like these shelters you can buy that are like open on one side. They're kind of like a mini tent type thing. So you can kind of, instead of bringing like a big umbrella, you can set up this little mini shelter and hang out at the beach all day and not worry about the sun. And she's like, I know I'm going to have fun at the beach and I'll, be with the boys and I'll go out every now and then, and do the dad thing, like I'm supposed to and play with my boys or whatever. But most of the time, the rest of the time, I'm going to be sheltering myself from the elements as much as possible because I love nature. I love nature, but I love the nature that's promised in the new creation. Okay, when we will not be at war with creation. Right now, creation is groaning. Scripture tells us that creation is groaning right along with us, waiting for the new creation. And that is exactly what happens when I go into nature. I groan, nature groans at me, nature attacks me, I attack nature. We set up a peace treaty years ago, and it's been really, effective. I stay in my territory, nature stays in its territory, but when that peace treaty is violated, bad things happen. And every time I go on something like this, a camping trip or a retreat, that peace treaty gets violated and nature, as it has every right to do, lashes out. So I'm going to be sitting in this little shelter on the beach with my Nintendo DS catching up on Dragon Quest. I think I'm on Dragon Quest, I can't remember which one. Six. Yeah, Dragon Quest VI. and one of the Castlevania Game Boy Advance games, and I think Final Fantasy Tactics Advance and Tactics Ogre, Knight of Lotus, and yeah, I'm going to be doing all kinds of nerdy things as much as possible while I'm avoiding sand and nature. So anyway, like I said, I will be really super duper off grid this week, so I apologize if you're needing to get in touch with me. That's probably not going to happen, either by email or on the forums. Even when I go off grid, I try to get on those forums and connect with you guys when I can. I don't know if that's going to be possible at all this week. So, but I'll be back and I'll produce the show next Friday, and then my office hours, my normal schedule, will resume the following Wednesday. I think it's like August 6th is when that's going to happen. So, but in the meantime, like I said, there should still be a show next week and video reviews and stuff in the meantime. I want to remind you guys also, if you're interested in kind of helping Christian Geek Central move into the next phase, you know, things are starting to happen now. As I said, you know, a while back, once we get that logo figured out, then I've got some plans that I want to get into motion. There's only so many of those plans I can do myself, and I really want Christian Geek Central to become not just a product of my imagination and my vision and, you know, the potential that I see for it, but the potential that you guys see for it. So if you have any ideas for content or whatever, if you want to be part of shaping that vision, or maybe you're not a visionary, but you're like, this is cool, I want to support this, I want to help make this happen. There's all kinds of roles, including roles that we can invent according to your skill sets and interests. Go to ChristianGeekCentral.com, click on About CGC, and scroll down to how you can get involved for more information. I'd love to have you involved to see what we can do with this thing next. All right, well, stay tuned for Farscape Shawarma after the credits, or jump back to episode 310 to start from the very beginning. Next week, if God wants it to happen, I'll have my review of the sci-fi movie Lucy, plus John Wilkerson is going to come by and review the book Flight of the Angels. Till then, thanks so much, guys, for making time for this show. I hope you have a great week, and that you join me next time here on the Spirit Blade Underground podcast as we continue to geek out and seek the truth.
Spirit Blade Underground is a community-supported endeavor of Spirit Blade Productions. This podcast is produced by Painter Friends and with support from the Christian Geek Central community at ChristianGeekCentral.com. For information about the latest entertainment and resources from Spirit Blade Productions, visit SpiritBlade.net. Thank you for listening.
Prepare for immediate starburst.
Okay, just finished watching season 1, episode 115, Durka Returns. Great episode of first season. Different from, say, an episode like Thrown for a Loss or PK Tech Girl, or not PK Tech Girl, but, well, maybe PK Tech Girl would fit into this, but DNA Mad Scientist. These are episodes from the first season of Farscape that I would say feel a lot like the kinds of episodes you can come to expect, although they don't have the layered, you know, investment of character development that naturally comes as the show progresses. So, but yeah, this is an episode that I think of like, okay, this is one of their on episodes, definitely from season one. One thing that I noticed about Farscape as a series with this episode that I may have not mentioned before, although it's been in play before, but I certainly noticed it in this episode, is that it has a very cinematic visual style. Prior to this on, you know, classic Star Trek or just, I would say, TV in general, you didn't have the camera moving the way the camera moves on this show, you know, with lots of handheld stuff where it's sweeping and rocking back and forth. And I believe I remember in one of the behind-the-scenes features of Farscape at some point them talking about how they really wanted the camera to always be moving, to never be still and static. And if you compare that to classic Trek, you know, or classic really TV of this era, it's a bunch of really still shots. Now, they might edit and cut, you know, from a one close-up to a wide shot or whatever, but those shots are mostly pretty static. They might pan and follow somebody as they walk from one place on the set to another.
But that's the camera is basically just there to give you the scene, to show you what's, just put it in front of you. And the camera here is, it seems much more designed to kind of put you there, to make you feel things. I mean, it's not just stylistic and cool. It's, you know, it gives you that sense of discovery as the camera moves forward, you know, and into the scene, or pulls out of it, or rocks from one place to another. It gives you that sense of being on the ship, and it puts you there. And I think that's a lot of what makes this show interesting to me, is that emotionally they really seem to want to put you there for every, you know, from the bottom up. I think from the way they handled so many practical effects, from the way they you know, handle the performances of the actors, especially the recurring cast, the camera effects, it's all designed to get you into the show emotionally. Whereas, you know, I'm not saying that other shows weren't trying that and they didn't do things to affect that outcome, but you know, it's a difference. You know, when you watch a show like that just has like static shots, you're a little bit more at a distance emotionally. That's just one more tool they can use when they move the camera around to get you engaged emotionally. Another example would be like slow motion shots. They use slow motion in this series. I don't think I saw a single slow motion shot in all of my time watching Next Generation. Not that I remember. I mean, there probably was at some point, but I don't want to say probably. I don't even know. I have no idea. Some Trek fan's going to have to tell me. But it wasn't, you know, what certainly wasn't a week to week thing, you know? I mean, and this show is just kind of known for, and at least to my memory, using slow motion, using these kind of movie-type establishing shots. Like when Durka first comes on board the ship, the first thing they show you is his feet, and it's a slow-motion shot following his feet, and they've got this ominous music. It's like, oh, man. Immediately you're thinking, oh, man, who is this? Whoever it is, it's not good, you know? And so there's just more stuff they do stylistically to kind of engage you emotionally, that I really, really appreciate. Let's see here. Oh yeah, some interesting inconsistencies, especially with Dargo in the pronunciation of Durka. I know that his name is pronounced Durka because whenever John says it, it's Durka, D-U-R-K-A. I believe I've even seen that spelling. Oh yeah, there's the episode name, Durka Returns, D-U-R-K-A. But there was, I think, just kind of some inconsistency in what was being told to the actors on the set, especially in this first season, you know. Dargo, who is supposed to be doing this kind of American accent, says Durker. And Elvis, I think, says Durker at one point. So I don't know why they did that. It was just kind of weird. I don't know if that's a... I know that sometimes an ER is added... in British or Australian, those types of accents, in some instances, in a word that ends with A. I think maybe when it's followed by a vowel, they do that. But anyway, just some weird kind of inconsistencies there in the pronunciation of his name. Hey, this episode introduces Chiana. I guess I don't want to say, since we're trying not to talk about the future at all of this show, I guess I don't want to say anything more than that. Yeah, Chiana, very interesting character. One thing that I noticed when I first saw this episode is that she stayed on the ship. She stayed on the ship. And this is just kind of like, it's not like a two-parter that, you know, that introduces a new character, or, you know, she stayed at the end of the episode. She's staying on the ship. There's no reason to think that she's not going to continue staying on the show. It was just a weird choice. I hadn't seen anything like that before. You know, I mean, it's almost like she stays on the ship in passing. I feel like, and my memory totally fails me here, but I feel like when, say, Worf joined the cast of Deep Space Nine, they made a little bit more of a thing out of it. Now, I suppose you would say that that's because he has such a history with Next Generation. It's a big deal. They should have made a thing out of it. But I don't know. I guess I can't really pinpoint what I find interesting about the way they introduce characters, the way the cast in one sense, it's kind of the intention is that it's a revolving door, you know, they introduce characters go away, new characters join the cast, and anyway, it's just, just interesting. I like Chiana. I'm annoyed by Chiana, but I also like what she brings to the show, and she doesn't annoy me like Xan does. She frustrates me, but in a way that doesn't really bother me. It's just like, oh my gosh, she would be driving me nuts if I had to spend time with her. But what she brings to the show is just this sense of youthful chaos that everybody has to deal with. And you see that even in this episode. You see it at the end when Xan is trying to treat Chiana and calls her a brat because she won't sit still to be treated, you know. I appreciate Chiana. This episode also had lots of episode callbacks. Whereas, you know, you look at an episode like the last one, Jeremiah Crichton, and I don't remember a single one. No, there were a couple. There were maybe just a couple. But this one really, you know, called back to a few continuity things that, you know, if you're just jumping onto the show, you're going to be like, huh? What? What does that joke mean? You know, he tells Dargo not to fall out of the ship again. And of course, there's the whole pregnant Moya thing and you know, and a few others peppered throughout. You know, that kind of thing just kind of increases as the show moves forward, or at least remains consistent. Dude, Rigel. Oh, man, I loved him, you know, just kind of facing up to Durka, you know, and just saying, you never broke me. And just like, oh, man, that's a great moment for Rigel, you know. Again, he's just this character that you kind of start out, at least I did, kind of start out being like, oh, man, this guy's a pompous jerk or whatever. And, you know, but he has these moments, these kind of redeeming moments, you know, where you're like, oh, man, I feel for him. I like him. I'm rooting for him, you know. Oh, I love the little line. Made me laugh because, you know, I'd totally forgotten the punchline. But, you know, he says, who knows what 100 years of Happy Meals has done to Durka, you know. Just thought that was a great way to describe the Nabari cleansing process, 100 years of Happy Meals. All right. Well, that's it for this time. Next time, an episode that is pretty key to, I would say, it's of the first season episodes, even though you wouldn't know it upon watching it. It is probably one of the most key episodes continuity-wise of the entire series, and that is A Human Reaction.